Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a new report on safeguarding children in the church shows Pope Benedict's visit to Britain sparked a positive response in the reporting of abuse cases. The Day for Life, to be celebrated in England and Wales on Sunday, focuses on ways of obtaining authentic happiness. And a fresh wind in our sails. Find out about an inspirational initiative taking place in the UK next September on Home Mission Sunday. Making the church a safer place for children in the UK. That's the focus of the third annual report of the National Catholic Safeguarding Commission, which was made public on Thursday. The report details many positive developments in the safeguarding ministry in England and Wales, but it also recognises there is no room for complacency in dealing with survivors of abuse by priests or other members of the church. The report notes that following Pope Benedict's visit to Britain in September last year, there was a threefold increase in the numbers of victims who felt able to come forward and report cases of sexual abuse that had taken place several decades ago. During his four-day visit, the Pope met with both survivors and members of the National Safeguarding Commission, telling them it is deplorable that children have suffered abuse at the hands of some priests and religious. In an introduction to the report, the Commission's chair, Baroness Patricia Scotland, said she was aware there was still much to do and that the Church needs to work on developing a more sensitive and pastoral response to the victims and survivors of abuse.
The best way to look at this is that we are on a journey. I don't think we will ever have perfection. What we will hope to have is a system in place which makes it really, really hard for someone who wants to do this to get away with it.
A former British Attorney General, Baroness Scotland, is well known for her success in reducing cases of domestic violence in the UK. I asked her if she believes that protection of children has now become a top priority for the Catholic Church.
Absolutely. I think when His Holiness came to the United Kingdom, you know, one of the first things he did was to go and speak with victims. The fact that canon law has been materially changed in the last 7 years and very strict and clear guidance has been given through canon law as to how it should be dealt with. We've been talking about how important the vulnerable, particularly children, are, how tenderly they must be treated, and how Christ himself made them a top priority. And so, of course, the Church is anxious about this and is trying to better understand the whole phenomenon of abuse so that we can better understand how to respond to it.
As you say, the guidelines are there. The difficulty, perhaps, is in compliance, particularly in countries where these subjects are still almost totally taboo.
But I think it's to understand that a number of countries are at different stages of that journey. Some countries have now had to deal with this issue for a while, and they have put in place guidelines and protocols, and the importance is making sure they are of general application and well understood. There are other countries where things are still not talked about, and I'm not talking about the church, because the church is wanting to deal with this, but within communities themselves. If you think back at how many people responded to domestic violence or rape, there is a huge issue in our communities about denial that these things take place. So one of the issues we were looking at is how do we educate our populations? How do we create an environment which will encourage people to feel able to come forward and disclose? How do we enable victims to understand it is not their fault if they are subjected to abuse, and that they are not responsible for the abuse visited on them by the abuser, many victims still think it's their fault. So I think there are a number of societal, community and church issues to deal with, and it's moving all of us together, understanding that if we are all to be in a different place, we're going to have to learn together. And it's not just the clergy, it is the community. How do we, as members of the community, better challenge, better identify what we need to do? So we're looking at how to build resilience, how to better prevent, how do we train those who come into the church, how do we sift those who should not work within the church. And it's not talking about the priests and the religious, but we have janitors and caretakers and people who work in our boarding schools and people who look after our children and people we employ, people who become part of the congregation and the laity. And we have to, I think, better understand that this is part of what happens in our humanity, and we've got to face that fact and challenge it.
You had significant success, didn't you, during your years as Attorney General in reducing, in tackling and reducing the problem of domestic violence in the UK. Is this more difficult, do you think, and is it as easy to find solutions?
I think anything that deals with intimacy between individuals and abuse is never going to be easy. But I think what we believe is we can do something about it. We can reduce it. We can contain it. We will never eradicate it from the human response of behaviours. Of course we won't. But we can make sure that we can better protect against it. We can better identify it. And then when and if we find it, we can deal with it more effectively, more robustly. And we can deal with it earlier. Because one of the advantages of understanding abuse and understanding the signs that are indicative of abuse is you can intervene at an earlier stage. And if you intervene at an earlier stage, you better protect the victims, but you also prevent the perpetrator from entering into a pattern of behaviour which is very difficult to get out of. And you stop them early, before they have had an opportunity to abuse more. It doesn't mean there's a panacea. I don't think it is more difficult. What my work with domestic violence teaches me is it is doable. But it is only doable if all of us work together. It won't be solved by the church working on its own, the bishops working. It will need the bishops working with the deacons, working with the laity, working with civil society, working with business. All of us are going to be part of the solution. And if we all work together and make ourselves better informed, then we have a great opportunity of reducing it. I think there are some really encouraging signs. If you look at what's happened in America, in the 1985 period, you had over 900 claims. Now the most recent data shows that there are 73, too many. But compared to where we were, we have made it harder for people to do this.
Do you think there are still cases that will come to light in the UK? The Bishops Conference, and indeed, as you say, broader society as a whole, has tackled this for two decades. Do you think there are cases that are still going to be coming to light?
Of course you can't say that won't happen, because I think one has to understand the nature of abuse, that it's quite often done in a way which is closeted. And you will know that one of the things that we've had to deal with is historical abuse. Some people have not spoken of these issues for 40, 50 years. We have very old people in their 80s who say for the first time, this happened to me. I think one of the comforting things looks as if, and I can't say this is correct, but just from the data we have, it looks as if the majority are historical and fewer are happening now, which means that the things we put in place may be, I emphasise that, reducing the opportunities. But we certainly can't say this is over. It will never be over, because human beings do things which are flawed, And I don't think we will ever have perfection. What we will hope to have is a system in place which makes it really, really hard for someone who wants to do this to get away with it, and to get away with it for very long.
You're bringing your wealth of legal experience to this job as chair of the Safeguarding Commission, but you're also coming at it from a Catholic perspective. Has this ever challenged your faith, or have you ever found your faith in some ways in conflict with your professional decisions?
No, I think my faith has informed my work. Christ loved children. The protection of children is one of the most important parts of his ministry. If you look at when he got really mad, he got mad when people hurt a child, when they wanted to stop children from coming to him. And he said, before you can come to the kingdom of heaven, you will have to be like one of these children. So all the work that I have done in relation to reducing child abuse is absolutely consistent with my faith and everything I have always been taught to believe and do believe about what being a Christian really means. It means about loving people in an appropriate way. And to love is to protect, is to care for, is to nurture. And one of the most painful things about abuse is when someone abuses a child, it limits that child's capacity to be fully themselves and to be fully what God intended them to be, which is a thing of beauty and wonder. And it often prevents that child from giving to the world what that child would be able to give to the world had they not been abused. So I think it's a fundamental part of my belief that we as a church, as the body of Christ, must strain every muscle to make sure that we're there to love, to protect, to nurture, and to enable children to grow to be the people that God wants them to be. I think one of the reasons that people are so pained by abuse when it happens within the church is because it may make those who should love God feel less able to do that. And that is a huge, huge deprivation, because you're not just abusing the person physically, you're abusing their soul and their spirit in a way that may be lastingly damaging. So I am proud that the church is trying with all its strength to fight this issue and to stand up for Christ and to say that the wounds of the victims are Christ's wounds, and that we must do everything we can to change it.
Baroness Patricia Scotland, the chair of the National Catholic Safeguarding Commission in England and Wales. On Sunday, July 31st, the Catholic Church in England and Wales marks its annual Day for Life, an observance called for by the late Pope John Paul II to celebrate the dignity of every human life. This year, the theme of the Day for Life focuses on the meaning of authentic happiness, a theme that Pope Benedict discussed with children and students from Catholic schools during his pastoral visit to Britain in September last year. Father John Sherrington is a moral theologian from the Diocese of Nottingham and is shortly to become Auxiliary Bishop of Westminster. His episcopal ordination will take place on September the 14th in Westminster Cathedral. He told me about the importance of this Day for Life, celebrated in parishes across England and Wales this Sunday.
We focused on the meaning of happiness, and Pope Benedict's written about the meaning of happiness. What makes us happy? And I think that that's a profound question for many people to answer. Certainly, there's a great preoccupation in finding happiness through wealth, through success. But the Pope reminds us about something much deeper. That's the human heart and the desire of God to speak into that heart. So I think this coming weekend, we've the opportunity to focus on the meaning of happiness. And that can rekindle people's love for God, for Jesus Christ, for the message of the gospel. Last Sunday's gospel spoke about Jesus offering the parable of the searching for the fine pearl, the treasure in the field, which is the same theme. And I think if we can rekindle that search in people for those deeper values, then they can find better happiness.
This theme of authentic happiness was actually drawn from the Pope's words to the children when he went to meet children and educators at Twickenham.
It is, yes. The Pope reminded each of the children there in that very creative, vibrant meeting, which was full of joy, about the desire of the human heart and the call that God gives each person, and that they're called to be saints. And I think that theme has captured many people's hearts, the call to be a saint and to rediscover what that means in however we each person lives out that call in their lives.
I hope that among those of you listening to me today, there are some of the future saints of the 21st century. Perhaps some of you have never thought about this before. Perhaps some of you think being a saint is not for you. Let me explain what I mean. When we are young, we can usually think of people that we look up to, people we admire, people we want to be like. It could be someone we meet in our daily lives that we hold in great esteem, or it could be someone famous. We live in a celebrity culture, and young people are often encouraged to model themselves on figures from the world of sport or entertainment. My question for you is this: what are the qualities you see in others that you would most like to have yourselves? What kind of person would you really like to be? When I invite you to become saints, I am asking you not to be content with second best. I'm asking you not to pursue an unlimited goal and ignore all the others. Having money makes it possible to be generous and to do good in the world, but on its own it is not enough to make us happy. Being highly skilled in some activity or profession is good, but it will not satisfy us unless we aim for something greater still. It might make us famous, but it will not make us happy.
Father John Sherrington, I'm wondering if you have your own saints or role models who inspire you in your ministry.
I'm inspired by an older saint now, Saint Alphonsus Liguori. He was made patron of moral theologians in the 1950s. But what St. Alphonsus was able to do was found a middle way through a very polarised debate at that time between those who were rather dismissive of moral teaching and those who were rather rigid. And I think that St. Alphonsus reintegrated the spiritual life and the moral life. That's important, and help people to find a way forward step by step in responding to that invitation of God. So St. Alphonsus Liguori, for me, is a very important saint.
And a model, perhaps, for the challenges facing the church in today's society.
I think he has a lot to offer in today's society, yes.
The Day for Life, as you say, is an annual initiative. How is it celebrated throughout the parishes, throughout the diocese?
It really depends on each particular parish priest. Of course, it falls just at the beginning of the summer holidays, so many people have gone away. But we receive resources, and then it's really up to each priest to develop those. Certainly in the Diocese of Nottingham, there's nothing more structured than that. But it is a theme that can tap into the heart.
There's a very poignant video as part of the material from Bishop Michael, who died just recently. Those kind of personal stories, personal witnesses, can often be the most encouraging sort of material that people can use, can't they?
They can, yes. I think that all of us have experience of visiting elderly parishioners in nursing homes, and they often are men and women full of deep faith. we can use those examples in our homilies. We can speak about the family values that we've inherited. So I think those personal communications, those personal stories do communicate very strongly. I was at Bishop Michael's funeral last week, and there the preaching focused on the many ways in which he had touched people's lives, his involvement with the young people at Taizé, his concern for the church in Cambodia, his passion for justice, and again his witness at the end of his life to living through suffering and finding hope in the cross.
You were involved also, weren't you, in drawing up the Bishop's 2004 document, Cherishing Life, which is a very lengthy and in-depth reflection on all aspects of protection of life, healthcare, research, medical research, marriage, sexuality, and so on. How much has that message, if you like, been received, do you think, by people in the pews?
Cherishing Life was a development, a way in which we tried to bring Pope John Paul II's encyclical, The Gospel of Life, into our culture. I think we've a lot more work to do. The document Cherishing Life is, as you say, a lovely document. It presents the themes of acting justly, loving tenderly, walking humbly with our God. I think that perhaps we didn't sufficiently promote it at the time. We didn't find the best way of communicating its core truths. So I think there's a lot we could revisit, and the Pope's focus on happiness, the Day for Life, has helped us to do that.
My thanks there to Bishop-elect John Sherrington, who will become an auxiliary of the Diocese of Westminster in September this year. Fresh wind in our sails is the inspirational theme for an event taking place on Sunday, September the 18th, or Home Mission Sunday, as it's celebrated in Catholic churches around England and Wales. Mid-September is also, of course, the first anniversary of Pope Benedict's pastoral visit to the United Kingdom, so Catholics around the country are being invited to share their memories in the hope that it can rekindle the same spirit of enthusiasm that followed the Pope's historic journey. The title, Fresh Wind in Our Sails, echoes the words that the Holy Father himself is reported to have said at the end of his successful four-day visit to Edinburgh, Glasgow, London and Birmingham. The anniversary of the visit will be celebrated from September the 16th to 18th, beginning with the re-establishment of the practice of Friday Penance on Friday the 16th. On Saturday the 17th, parishes, families and other groups are being encouraged to get together and share memories of the trip, while offering a prayer for the Pope's intentions. On Sunday the 18th, there'll be a national mass of thanksgiving and collections in local parishes to support the work of evangelisation in England and Wales. The Home Mission Sunday initiative is being launched in the summer to allow people plenty of time to prepare well ahead. If you have an inspirational story about the effects that papal visit had on you or someone you know, you're asked to email it to the Home Mission Desk of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales at the following address: Mission Volunteer, all one word, at cbcew.org.uk. The bishop in charge of mission in England and Wales is Kieran Connery, head of the Diocese of Arundel and Brighton and chair of the Department for Evangelisation and Catechesis. As this initiative was announced, he released a video urging Catholics to share their memories of the papal visit this September, just as they undoubtedly shared photographs with families and friends at the time.
I want to talk today about Home Mission Sunday, which is celebrated this year on September the 18th. And the inevitable focus of this year's celebration is the fact that it's the first anniversary of the visit of Pope Benedict the 16th. In fact, the day he left from Oscott, took the plane from Birmingham Airport and returned to Rome. And it's said that when he got to Rome, that he said himself of the visit, that it had filled his sails again with new wind He'd felt, like many of us, I think, relieved at the visit, because I think he shared the anxiety of many of us that he would receive a hostile or unfriendly or indifferent, apathetic reception. But of course, we remember very clearly the excitement it generated. And what we want to do in Home Mission Sunday this year is to say to people, well, you know, fill your sails again with fresh wind. Pick up that enthusiasm and excitement again, and let it blow through, blow away some of the dust that sort of settled into corners, and blow away some of the tiredness and indifference and apathy that's crept into our own lives, and fill our sails again with that confidence and joy of being a Catholic. And so the focus on Home Mission Sunday is not to lose that impetus. And the question is then put to people, you know, what's it done for you? Has it made you feel different about being a Catholic? Has it inspired you to do anything? And then tell stories, if you can, of, you know, what you've seen around the parish as a result of it. You've seen renewed interest in this, you've seen increased numbers, you've seen, well, we have seen increased numbers. We've seen a rise in baptisms, confirmations this year are up. It's not only numbers, but to ask people to share your experience. What happened to you as a result of your sharing in the Pope's visit, even if you only saw it on television, or if you did get to Coughton Park, or if you did get to Hyde Park? You know, have you shared those experiences? I'm sure you've shared the photographs, but since then, not just on the day, but how have you felt since then? And do you feel different now, 1 year on? I would hope the answer is, yes, I feel different, and I feel better. People's lives have been changed. I think many people's lives have been changed by the visit of the Pope. I know, for instance, that the lady that coordinated the distribution of tickets for our diocese in Arundel and Brighton, not an easy task. She then became a Catholic at Easter, and I was delighted for her. It was a joy to see her in the cathedral for the rite of election. And there are many stories like that. And I'm sure the Pope touched the hearts of thousands. If I were to suggest one thing that we might carry from the Pope's visit, I think it would be that image of filling our sails again with the breath of the Spirit, with a fresh wind. It's a lovely image of wind. I mean, wind can be destructive, but we usually think of wind in terms of life-giving, refreshing, invigorating. You know, one of the best images of freshness and energy is people standing on top of a hill with the wind blowing through the grass, blowing through the hair, blowing through their lungs. It's a lovely image of life itself, first of all, not just life, but energy. So I'd ask people to hang on to that. Let the wind blow into the sails.
Bishop Kieran Connery of Arundel and Brighton is chair of the Bishops' Conference Department for Evangelisation and Catechesis. And once again, if you have an inspirational story about the effects that papal visit had on you or someone you know, you're asked to email it to the Home Mission Desk of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales at the following address: Mission Volunteer, all one word, at cbcew.org.uk. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.